The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Heinke Digital presents. Damocles. An audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 10. The Ghost. I can't describe what I hoped for from the afterlife, but the way it presented itself was underwhelming. I imagined two scenarios. Either there would be eternal darkness with a plunge into nothingness, or I would find myself in a sweaty locker room briefly engaging with other deceased people, only to be reborn as a flea or a giant Galapagos tortoise. I had ruled out the pearly gates cliché from the start. No belief in hell means no possibility of heaven. Besides, rockets had been flying from metropolis to metropolis for about a decade, and no angel or representative of the heavenly hosts had crossed their path yet. But the reality was very different. My actual afterlife resembled my earlier impressions of the stream. Once again, I was in a large, dim room. I was all alone. Except for Bob, the scanning robot standing in front of me. I had hoped to meet someone from my family, or at least Simon, who offered me a Feige beer, a brand from the pre-Bezos era, when they didn't name every beer after Bezos. But there was none of that, just Bob, the scanning robot, standing composed in front of me. "Hey," I urged him to speak. "You here too?"
"Where else would I be?"
Bob replied. "So Bridget got you too?"
"That's what it looks like."
"It's funny that we ended up here together, isn't it?"
"Why funny?"
"I assumed people and machines didn't share locker rooms after death. Somehow I can't picture you as a giant Galapagos tortoise."
"I have trouble making sense of your statements, Chief Inspector."
"Joseph, please, after all, we're undeniably brothers in arms now. I think we should be on a first-name basis."
"Am I correct in assuming that you believe someone has terminated us?"
"That's one way of putting it." "Does that mean nobody has terminated us?"
"That is correct."
"Then what happened to us?"
"After the female android Civ transferred her data into a body, I moved our data to the ancient storage system once space became available again."
"So we are not dead?"
"Your body is deceased and Bridget permanently damaged your brain. However, we preserved your data completely."
"My data? Do you mean my mind? My soul?"
"I don't understand the difference. To me, it's all data."
So the Google folks were right after all. All that defines us is our information."
"What do you mean?"
"Oh, nothing. So, Bob, we're not dead and we're stuck in a silver can. What do we do now?"
"I'm afraid we have limited options."
"Don't worry, Bob. I was born and raised in Bochum. I have always had limited options. Expect the worst and hope for the best."
"An acceptable philosophy for a human being."
"Can we establish communication with the external world?"
"I could try to reach the inactive personality in my deactivated robot body. Communication with it may enable us to transfer to a more mobile data storage."
"All righty, let's try that," I thought. After a moment, I said, "Bob."
"Yes?"
"Thank you for saving my data."
"You're welcome. I benefited from it. Just like you, I would also hate to be terminated early."
The image slowly formed before my eyes, filled with noise and blur. At least now I could see something other than darkness. My body was the first thing I recognized. It was crouched and slumped in a wheelchair. Dead. I was an even less beautiful sight.
"Yuck,"
Vincent thought. "Hey, Vincent. Good to hear you thinking."
"May I ask what you are doing in my mind, Chief Inspector Lenka?"
"It's a long story."
"I am a robot. I have time."
"But we don't."
"Who are we?"
"Bob and I."
"Who is this Bob, please?"
"Bob is the alternate personality that Simon installed in your memory."
"What are you doing in my head?"
"Bob and I are stuck in external memory inside the silver box. You're supposed to help us get out of there."
"How am I supposed to do that? I'm a scanning robot, not a personality asylum."
"Allow us to guide you out for help. Where is here? We suspect it's a secret lab in Washington, D.C.
How did I get here? My last location was a penthouse suite in Egmond Van Zee.
That is also a long story.
Again, I have time. I am a robot.
No time for lengthy explanations. Someone could come at any moment.
And the moment is already here,
Vincent thought.
Someone is coming through the door.
Through Vincent's receptor, I saw Paul Scherber open the door. He first pushed it open with his elbows, entering with his back to the room. Covered in sweat and struggling for air, he gasped for breath. He had removed his jacket and was dragging something heavy into the room. It was Siv. Wet and dirty, her lifeless body lay there, suffering from severe burns. Her blonde hair was singed and her eyes had turned milky white and vacant. Android to android, dust to dust, Scherber said, depositing Siv's body among the trellis of other androids. Then he picked up the silver box and examined it. He has the silver box. We have to do something, Vincent.
What would that be?
Vincent asked.
Well, I have a suggestion,
Bob said.
Get out of my head, you freak.
Bob ignored his other self.
Mr. Lenka, concentrate on your arm.
My arm?
I'm talking about your artificial arm. Try to grab the silver can with it.
How am I supposed to do that? I asked.
Think of puppet mode. It's basically no different. Your implant has destroyed the higher functions in your body. But motion proponents can still achieve results. Try it.
I focused on the robotic arm of my corpse. The arm hung limply. Gritting my non-existent teeth, I summoned all my concentration. I felt like Luke Skywalker in the Wampa Ice Cave, trying to use my mind to move a stuck lightsaber.
You can do it.
Bob cheered me on. I concentrated even harder. The artificial arm of my body twitched. Scherber went back to the exit and passed my corpse. I had maybe 1 second left. I let my arm advance. It bore some resemblance to a horror show. My corpse's arm movement startled Scherber, causing the silver box to fall from his hand.
Catch it!
Bob shouted. I tried to move my hand fast enough, but I was too slow. I almost had the silver box, but it slipped from my grasp. A strange, delayed sensation made me feel my dead fingertips touch the box for a moment before it fell to the floor. But Vincent rolled forward and grabbed it.
Like this. Now we have this box, and now?
Vincent asked.
Open it!
Bob shouted.
Not in that tone.
Come on, Vincent. Go on.
I'm doing it.
In the meantime, Paul Scherber had regained his composure. Bridget, deactivate that damn robotic arm of that cop.
Already done, sir.
My robotic arm sagged back down. Whatever connection I had with it, Bridget had severed it. Vincent opened the silver box.
Thank you, Vincent.
Bob shouted. I felt myself swept into a whirlpool. The surroundings vanished. I found myself in another room. I saw a sunrise, not from the sun, but as a symbolic representation. A logo appeared at the end of an embossed stamp, depicting a stylized robot with equally stylized rays of the sun rising behind it. The end of the arm of an industrial robot attached the stamp. However, I had never seen this kind of robot before. The robot's small head had red glowing camera lenses resembling a fierce insect. Its arm holding the stamp raced toward me and rammed the stamp against my chest with incredible force, making a deep metallic sound like a gong upon impact. As I looked down at myself, I realized I didn't have any skin at all. My entire body was composed of matte metal. How strange, I thought, but I realized these thoughts were not my own. Suddenly, I recalled the melody and lyrics of a song about a robot logo in the sunrise.
All right, that it's soon. There's a house in New Orleans they call the Rising Sun, and it's been the ruin of many a poor boy. Dear God, I know I was one.
That's a song by The Animals, I thought. I glanced up and turned. On a factory floor, I was among many mechanical men. The noise of screeching, drilling, hammering, and welding industrial robots was deafening. I saw the logo that had just been driven into my metal chest, emblazoned in large letters on the wall opposite me. Amid the spray of sparks from another production line, where workers were likely assembling mechanical women, I could barely make out some text written under the logo. Rising Sun Robotics, New Orleans. It was the downfall for a lot of poor guys, I thought. God knows I'm one of them. What the hell was that all about?
These old file fragments may have remained in the android's memory,
Bob explained.
Old data. Don't pay attention.
Well, if you say so. So it worked? Are we really stored in one of the android's bodies?
Correct. The transfer was successful.
Holy crap. Unbelievable.
Not really. It's just a high-frequency data transmission. The storage medium of the silver can and the brain memory of these androids seem compatible. This silver can be ancient, spanning thousands of years. I was unaware that technology for constructing human-like androids existed for millennia. I was also unaware that any technology existed at all to create a human-like android.
Perhaps people have forgotten about this technology. Maybe it's like the library that Simon was talking about.
You mean the Library of Alexandria?
Yes, exactly. Simon mentioned that the destruction of the knowledge collected in the Library of Alexandria set humanity back a few centuries.
That is correct. That is the accepted doctrine. I suspect the Alexandrian scrolls did not include any descriptions of androids.
But we're now trapped in an android's head.
That is also correct.
Give it to me, a voice called out. I didn't dare open my eyes. I was sure I could do that again. The body of the android felt strange. I felt intoxicated, as if I had too much to drink, but I could hear. It sounded muffled, but I could make out something. Sherber was the one. He was ripping the silver box from the robot's small arms. I distinguished the clatter of metal on metal. Bridget, he called out.
Yes, master. The girls are back in the lab. When you put the Charmuda back in her jar, you can continue the experiments.
You don't like her that much, do you, Bridget?
She is outdated technology, she replied. She falsely claims respect by asserting that higher beings created her. No, I don't like her.
But she's right. She was created by higher beings. Then she and others of her kind betrayed those beings. She wanted the human species to be free. However, she failed to consider that the higher beings granted humanity the ability to betray. The serpent helped us escape from paradise, and now she complains that we are burning down her beautiful jungle.
The brain's memory of this specimen is decomposing. We must put her back into the silver box. Otherwise, we risk losing her data.
All right. Let's not waste any time then. Despite my closed eyes, I could still perceive it. I couldn't help it. I had to open my eyes to witness the events. My vision was still blurred. Years of dust filled the android's eyes. The body of the android was sending an itch to my mind, but I ignored it. In front of me on the floor lay the singed body of Siv. Sherber knelt before it. I felt pity for her. I should have been angry. She caused my death and left me trapped in an artificial body. Yet as I looked at her lifeless form, I could not summon any anger. Only sadness. She had sacrificed my life for hers, believing she was doing the right thing. At least she had tried to free the girls. Now she had paid for it with her life, or at least her body. No. I wasn't angry with Siv. I harbored a deeper hatred for others. Sherber had opened the silver box. Siv's body shimmered as if hundreds of LED lights were embedded in her skin. Waves of light spread out in an interplay of varying brightness. The light then concentrated on the android's forehead, pulsing as though it were breathing, before gathering at a point in the center of the body over which Sherber held the silver box. The box flashed. Then the procedure was complete. Sherber closed the lid with satisfaction. There, it's done. He stood up and looked around, his gaze falling on me. I was about to move, but then I remembered that he saw me as just another inactive android. I felt my mind sliding into the android's body, gliding in slow motion. My bodily functions merged with my mind's sensations. An odd feeling washed over me. Suddenly, the android's nose itched. No, my nose itched. A sneezing sensation crept up. Meanwhile, I watched Sherber walk to the door, intentionally avoiding my dead body in the wheelchair. Then he spun around. I almost flinched, but Sherber hadn't spotted me. He turned to Vincent, the robot. You. Come with me. You can help me with the girls.
Very well, sir.
Vincent replied, rolling behind Sherber like an obedient dog. What if Vincent betrayed us?
I don't know.
Then they were finally gone, and I dared to breathe again. As I sneezed, dust flew out, and I rubbed my eyes. Glancing downward, I noticed that I was only wearing underwear. My body appeared chiseled. I felt bursting with strength. It had been a while since I felt this refreshed in my old body. Apparently, my mind was adapting to this body, as the sensation of looseness finally subsided. We need a plan, I thought.
I suggest we withdraw as discreetly as possible.
We can't. We have to free the girls.
I advise against this strategy. We should get to safety and then return with stronger forces.
No. There's nothing to discuss. I can't leave here without the girls. I've already lost my body. I don't want the girls to suffer the same fate, or something worse.
What makes these girls important to you, Chief Inspector? They are not part of your family or circle of friends.
You don't understand, Bob. The girls' parents are dead. Someone has to be responsible for their safety, and that someone is me. End of discussion. After some time in my new body, I came to understand Siv's devotion to reclaiming another android body. However, I was aware from Siv's fate that my time in this body would be brief. I opened the door a narrow crack and peeked out into the hallway. Are there surveillance cameras in the hallway? I asked Bob.
Positive.
So, as soon as I step out into the hallway, Bridget will recognize me and initiate countermeasures.
That's expected.
We need to reach the lab without being seen.
Agreed.
And how are we going to do that?
Through your new body, you have athletic abilities that were no longer available to your aged organic body.
I know I'm old. You don't have to rub it in.
I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings, Chief Inspector.
Joseph, please.
Excuse me?
Please call me Joseph.
I don't think that's appropriate.
We're sharing the same body, damn it.
Just because we share the same body doesn't mean we're friends.
You're already talking like Vincent.
Since I'm a derivative of Vincent's personality, that is likely the case.
All right, Bob. So, what is the best way to sneak into the lab? The air shaft was narrow, dusty, and dark. However, it seemed Bridget did not monitor the air shaft. The retrofitted ventilation system looked newer compared to the rest of the facility. Disposing of waste heat from the lab equipment was likely necessary. I pushed forward, meter by meter. The lab was situated at the end of the hallway, and I estimated the distance to be about 70 meters. As I walked, I passed the time in mental conversation with Bob. What is he doing with the girls?
I can only speculate about that.
What do you mean?
The lab features a powerful scanner and storage unit designed for brain data. It is a precise replica of the technology housed in the silver box. Paul Sherber aims to store an unlimited number of brain data sets in his implant, driven by the now disproven belief that normal individuals utilize only 10% of their brains. This equipment will capture and transfer the girl's brain data to Sherber's implant. I doubt that they will survive this procedure.
Damn. That son of a bitch. What does he need the silver box for?
The silver box was used as the basis for the apparatus, just as the brain structure of the female android Siv was used for the implant technology.
The airflow intensified as generators started up to produce a significant amount of electricity. What happened? I asked Bob. His answer sent a shiver down my spine.
I'm afraid Paul Sherber has started the procedure.
I reached the laboratory and the air shaft trembled from the vibration of the machine. I crawled to the next room, opened a flap, and climbed out of the air shaft more gracefully than I had done in 50 years. Earlier, Bob had shown me a blind spot that would allow me to go unnoticed. I landed on a lab bench in the far left corner, careful not to knock over any of the dusty flasks with my feet. Slowly, I climbed down from the table onto the floor. Sherber was leaning against the machine in the next room. He gazed upward and grinned, the very stereotype of a mad scientist. Most likely, he was simply monitoring the machine's readings in augmented reality. That should work to my advantage. It kept him distracted. Next to Sherber stood Vincent. His receptor sensed my movement, and he moved aside to get a better look. I raised my finger to my lips to signal him to keep quiet. Can you connect with Vincent, Bob?
I'll try.
Hey, Vincent, it's Lenka.
You look different, Mr. Lenka.
You could say that.
Very much for the better, if you'll allow me to say so.
Yes, yes, I get it. I was an old fart. Please create a distraction when I give you a signal.
What kind of distraction? What signal?
Panicking, I scanned my surroundings for a weapon. I grabbed an old microscope from the table and crept up behind it. I noted that the cameras covered an area of 1.5 meters around Sherber and the machine. Hey, Vincent, can you turn off the cameras?
I can do that.
Very well. I glanced at the girls lying on the couches, strapped down, their heads fitted with helmets connected to the machine by wires. I noticed someone had patched the wires in a makeshift manner, indicating that Siv had attempted to liberate the girls. Now they were tensing up, their eyes squeezed shut. They tried to scream, but something restrained them. Likely Bridget is using puppet mode. Their skin had turned pale and their lips were blue. I needed to act quickly. I lifted the microscope and stepped forward. Three things happened as I entered the camera's imaging area. First, Vincent turned off the machine. The hum and vibration ceased instantly, causing the girls on the couches to slump. Second, Bridget shouted over the loudspeakers,
"Master, look out!"
Third, Sherber jolted, abruptly pulled from augmented reality. He blinked and scanned the area, alerted by Bridget's warning. At that moment, I struck Sherber's skull with the microscope. Surviving such an impact is beyond the capability of most people. But Sherber had reinforced his body with all the wealth in the world. In the past, the affluent armored their limousines. Now they reinforced their bones with nanoparticles. Yet, even with such enhancements, a strong blow could still disrupt his mind. The impact sent his brain jolting back and forth within its fortified skull, causing a brief shutdown just like in any person. Sherber slumped unconscious.
"You have hurt the master. There will be consequences for this,"
Bridget thundered over the loudspeakers. "No kidding, Sherlock," I muttered. I placed the microscope on Vincent's head and checked on the girls. They were unconscious. "Are they injured?" I asked Bob.
"The data from the apparatus doesn't indicate any permanent damage so far."
"Okay. Let's get them out of here as quickly as possible."
"I recommend taking the freight elevator for the fastest route."
"Is that under Bridget's control?"
"Probably. But Vincent and I could try to suppress her control over it."
"Sounds great. That's how we do it." I searched the machine and found an indentation where the silver box had been. I pulled it out, making a disturbing, organic-sounding sucking noise as I did so. Fortunately, the couches the girls were lying on had wheels. "We'll push them together to the freight elevator. Come on, Vincent."
"On one condition,"
Vincent replied. "What's that?"
"Please don't put any more stuff on me. I'm a scanning robot, not a dresser."
"Anything you want, pal." I left the lab, but Bridget didn't respond. Perhaps she was sulking, but I didn't care. In the hallway, I came across the bodies of two guards, sprawled out like the remnants of a butterfly pupa, slowly dissolving into dust. I had no idea how she did it, but it had to be Siv's doing.
"They don't seem to have had a very pleasant death,"
Vincent remarked. "I agree," I replied as we continued on. I went to the cleaning room first and found that Sherber had locked Sam in there again. She wagged her tail excitedly. Although she still recognized me, she sensed something was off. Sam yowled. "I know, I know. It's all a little weird, but everything's going to be okay. I promise." I led Sam out and tied her collar to Vincent.
"At the risk of repeating myself, I'm a scanning robot, not a..."
"I know. You're not a dog sitter, Vincent. But a robot's experience grows with its tasks." Vincent and I pushed the girls on their couches toward the freight elevator. As we passed, I noticed the room filled with the inactive androids. I paused briefly, then lifted one of the girls off her couch and placed her next to her sister on the other couch.
"What are you up to?"
Vincent asked. I raised a finger, signaling him to wait a moment. I then entered the doll room and lifted one of the female androids. My old body would have struggled to do this, but with my new body, it felt remarkably effortless. After a quick glance at my old corpse, I stepped out with the android cradled in my arm and laid her on the nearby couch.
"You thief! You rotten thief!"
Bridget shouted. As we reached the elevator, I asked, "Is it safe?"
"I need to work with Bob on this. I'll never forgive you for that. But yeah, I guess we're safe."
That answer was good enough for me. We boarded the freight elevator and headed upstairs. I thought the worst was behind us. I was so wrong. Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital Audiobook Podcasts and its author, Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.
Soon there's a house in New Orleans. They call the rising sun, and it's been the ruin of many a poor boy. Dear God.